This is Soil Sense Field Check, where we explore some of the more practical aspects of building healthier soils. I'm Tim Hamrich, and over the past five seasons of the Soil Sense podcast, we've learned that building healthier soils takes curiosity, creativity, and collaboration between farmers, researchers, consultants, and extension. These stories have both inspired and informed a lot of people, but the question still remains, how do I make this work on my farm? That's why we like to produce these field check segments to explore some of the more practical aspects to soil health. Agronomy, logistics, equipment, best practices, safety, and other important considerations. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Field Check. Hey there, thanks for joining me for another episode of Field Check. I'm your host, Tim Hamrich. This is our 12th installment of this series looking at how soil health gets implemented in practice. Today we're going to talk about some of the challenges with cover crops in an environment like North Dakota and highlight how barley can be a helpful crop in overcoming some of these challenges. You're going to hear from two guests today, Dr. Dave Franson, soil scientist with NDSU Extension, and Jason Hansen, crop consultant and owner of Rock and Roll Agronomy. We're going to kick things off here with Dr. Franson talking about some of those challenges of getting cover crops established in a corn-soybean rotation in a place like North Dakota.
If you're just corn and soybeans, the opportunity to put in a cover crop that's really going to be meaningful and do anything is really slim in our environment. We don't take off the soybeans in September and get about 3 months before it freezes like it does 300 or 400 miles south of here. We take the beans out of the field maybe about the 1st of October, and a lot of times we might have snow, you know, the 15th of October. So there's really no time. And we tried various ways to put a cover crop in the standing soybeans, and it was a failure, about 2 out of 3 times. And even when it was quote-unquote successful, the amount of dry matter you got out of it was in the 100, 200 pounds or so an acre. It just didn't matter at all. We interseeded into corn, and that was a real kind of a ride. And we were almost always successful doing it, except in the very driest of years. But even at that, at the end of the season, we took the corn out, middle of October, and then it was freezing just pretty soon after that. So I think the most dry matter we had out of that interseeding at about V6 or so, 6-leaf stage, was somewhere around 400 or 500 pounds an acre, and it's just not a lot.
But of course, the flip side of this is that leaving the soil uncovered is absolutely not a good option, especially on areas like hilltops. Unfortunately, every year we see soil from farmers' fields blowing away.
One of the challenges I know that a lot of people have are those eroded hilltops, and you try to establish something on them, and you know, the neighbor's dirt blows over on you and it kind of blows it out. So if you had a small grain crop out there and then allow the volunteers to grow and then leave those standing, the chances of losing more soil and keeping what you have and maybe quickening the transition to a soil that actually acts like a soil instead of a sandbox would be more possible.
Dr. Franson's been studying the impacts of barley added into these rotations and says he can confidently answer the question on whether or not it helps soil health.
One of the objectives was to see how the barley would fit with the idea of helping the soil health, and it really does. If you just look at a corn and soybean rotation, the opportunity to grow some kind of a cover crop is pretty low in this region. But with barley, you're taking it up early in the season that often have 2 months' time for you to grow a cover crop. And it's not unusual to grow a ton of dry matter with rye or oats or radish, or just leaving the barley as a volunteer and using that as the grass, which is, to me, the cheapest thing to do. So that's a big win. And then the next question, where it's going from here, is the nitrogen that's being taken up by the barley, by that cover crop afterward, when does it come into play? We found that it doesn't come into play the very first year afterward. In your very first year cover crop, it just doesn't evaporate, doesn't leach, It's not lost, it's in the bank, but it takes a while. And so far, what we've seen is it takes about at least a couple of years for a little bit of it to be expressed, and probably 4 years of continuous cover crop to really get it so that it's recycled into the system, so that you're actually using less nitrogen than you would have if you hadn't used a cover crop at all.
Okay, so now we're going to head to the field with crop consultant Jason Hansen. Jason introduces us to one of his farmers' barley fields and explains how they're approaching their management and soil health. A quick word of warning here, Jason is literally talking to us from this field, so there is going to be some wind in the background.
So this barley right here is a two-row barley, and we want to probably keep more cover on this ground. And you know, anybody that's dealt with barley, we know what type of straw yield potential we have out here. This June, we had to use some palisade, and you'll notice how nice everything is standing in this area right in here. And then you get out into this area, and we are more challenged with how things are going to stand. That is an impact on my stubble height that we're going to have to use for this fall. So you know, out here, this is two row generally stays greener longer. But if you have it standing up nice like this, you can probably cut that a little higher than you need to. You don't need to move all that green material through your combine, okay? Where we are lodged, where we have a challenge to stand up, you know that we're gonna be a lot shorter in our heights out there. So that is one of the things that, how are we gonna do? So the palisade for me that we put on is helping with the standability, which is going to then help with the cutter bar height, which is then going to help with, if this stands and I can harrow it, I'll probably be able to leave more residue than if it is laying down. Then it's a challenge of, are we going to be having to work this ground up to get it mixed in? So that is one of the things that I think about on fields like this. This was an edible bean field last year, so there wasn't a lot of residue. So now, how are we going to manage this going into next spring? This field will probably be canola next year, and so I need to manage my residue fairly decent with that, because I'm seeding shallow and I have a small seed. Because I don't want to get a pro-till out here and make this black this fall, because I don't want it to blow. I had too many soils that were worked this spring because it was wet, and then we got a lot of wind, and then things blew. I want to try to minimize that. I had crops that blew out, canola in particular, and we just can't have that happen. So if I'm going to plant on canola and have those similar potential situations, I got to manage this residue this fall.
Jason says that while going no-till is definitely an option for some of his farmers, others either can't or don't want to go down that road. However, he points out that even for those who have to work the field, there are options for minimizing disturbance.
So this farmer has got, he's got malt barley, he's got canola, he's got edible beans and corn. And this year we just didn't have any corn because it got too late. So my biggest residue crop, if he has it, of course, is corn, and we manage accordingly. His least, as it ends up, is edible beans. That's the one that I'm the most concerned about, because I have the most potential for things to blow. And edible beans, soybeans, they're just not a real great soil health type crop when it comes to the root system protecting things from blowing. So one of the things that I'm going to have guys change this next year is that if you want to minimize that disturbance, let's go to a narrower cultivator shank if you have to work the field, right? If you got stuff that's laying down, my fear is that this will be worked, because the straw is going to stay, there's going to be a lot of straw on the ground. To get out and harrow it, we're getting into, this will be probably the end of this month or September. My days are going to be wet. I got more dew. The straw is going to be hard to manage. So I need to still convince people to stay the course. But if you have to till, let's go to a 2-inch spike instead of a 4-inch beaver tail, because that's really going to get this black. And it'll lump up and it might not blow, but it has a way better chance that it will blow. The field doesn't have to be black to have what you do. It just has to have some ability to warm up a little bit. So our challenge this year was that we had one of those years where everybody's going to say, I can't no-till, I won't no-till. This doesn't make any sense for me. Well, there's places that it does make sense. I've got another grower that's doing it to some degree. He's minimizes disturbance, and he's not strictly true no-till, but when we got dry the last 2 weeks, his crops held in a lot better than anybody else did, just because he could maintain. He's got that cover on the ground and he's retaining moisture. It's all part of a system that you got to sit and look back and look at your rotation, your farmer, his equipment, how harvest is going to go. So I guess that's the fun part and the challenge. It's not easy. You can't like, oh, if we do this, then that. It's like, if we do this, we have to think ahead of time as to what we want to do.
Well, thank you very much to Jason Hansen and to Dr. Dave Franson for contributing to today's episode of Field Check. This program is made possible thanks to the support of the North Dakota Corn Council, the North Dakota Wheat Commission, the North Dakota Soybean Council, the North Dakota Barley Council, and Anheuser-Busch. For more stories like this, visit ndfieldcheck.com and subscribe to Soil Sense wherever you get your podcasts.